This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen along with you. Cancers of the head and neck account for approximately 3% of all malignancies in the United States. However, the good news is that the overall mortality rates for head and neck cancers have been on the decline for the last decade. Well, here with more on all of this is Dr. Robert Kelman, professor and chair of otolaryngology and communication sciences, and Dr. Francis Hahn, professor of radiation oncology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome to you both. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks. Thank you for having us.
So, cancers of the head and neck basically have been on the decline, at least mortality has. That's good news. Why is that happening, Dr. Kelman?
It's good news, but the news isn't as good as we'd like to believe because the overall incidence of cancer of the head and neck does not seem to be totally declining. We're seeing a decline in smoking-related cancers, but at the same time, we're seeing an increase in viral stimulated cancers. So it looks like it's kind of averaging out, so we're still we still have a way to go.
So smoking has been a crucial cause of head and neck cancers, is that right, Dr.
Yeah,
Hahn?
Of course. Yeah.
And so with the decrease in smoking, or since the large campaign against smoking, there has been a concomitant reduction then in those kinds of cancers.
Yeah, that's right. We have noticed that cancer in other sites but the throat area, what we call oropharynx, had been gradually declining. That is what we mean is in the front portion of the mouth and the what we call the thigh, in the area of the larynx, which is where we make some voices. Those areas, there is a tendency to decrease in the incidence. But what we found over about past 10 years, that there was a very rapid increase in cancer in the oropharynx that usually includes base of tongue and tonsils.
So it really has to do very specifically with the anatomy or what parts are being affected. And I want to get into that a little bit more in terms of the actual causation or how the cancer grows. But you mentioned this notion, you've both been alluding to the fact that there's been a rapid increase in a certain type of cancer. Tell us more about that, Dr. Kelman. And you said virally induced. So this is through the human papillomavirus. That's the culprit?
That's correct.
Explain
to us about
that.
That's the virus that, it's the wart virus. So as we all know, it's very prevalent. And some epidemiologic studies have suggested that by middle age, up to 90% of the population has been infected by the wart virus. Now, the wart virus has many, many types.
Strains within it.
And there's one in particular that seems to be associated more with head and neck cancer than the others. There are four so-called risky types, and those are the ones that are in the vaccines. The vaccine was created because of a very powerful link identified between this virus and cervical cancer in women. And initially, that's why the vaccine was created, but now it's become quite clear that its ability to cause cancer is not limited to the cervix.
Yeah, I mean, now it's been a few years, but Michael Douglas, a big celebrity, was diagnosed with throat cancer and came out with what at the time was a fairly shocking statement that he felt it was as a result of engaging in oral sex. But that seems to be, in part, it is a sexually transmitted disease.
That is correct.
When you say most of us or 90% of adults by the time they reach adulthood may be infected with a strain of HPV, that's not suggesting that they are then have the strain that might lead to cancer. Is that right?
That's correct. The problem is that we don't really know which people have which strain.
Right.
So, and there does seem to be evidence that people who have been more active sexually, particularly with oral sex, are more likely to have this strain. So the numbers that I've seen are that if you've had more than 6 oral sex partners, your likelihood is significantly increased.
You know, we've made a statement we make a collective statement, head and neck cancers or cancers of the head and neck, but there are very specific anatomical parts that we're talking about. Let's go through what they are. Just why don't you run through what are we talking about when we say cancers of the head and neck?
It's a confusing term, particularly I think for the lay public, because we have connotations that they may not be aware of. So A lot of people think of the head as including the brain and the skin, but those are not included in that category. So skin cancer is a separate category, eye cancer, brain cancer. So we're talking about cancers that involve the mucous membranes of the oral cavity, pharynx, nose and sinuses, nasopharynx, and then the throat, which includes the voice box and the food pipe.
How about the salivary glands? Are those also included?
Those are included. They represent a much smaller percentage, and they really are a different type because they're not mucous membranes. They're not included in the issues we've been discussing, such as virus and smoking.
How, mm-hmm. Dr. Hunt, how would someone know? I'd like to go through these actually in by area. Mm-hmm. How would you know if you had oral cancer, for example? Well, what should you be looking for?
Well, usually the patient has some symptoms. Some soreness in the mouth.
Sores of some kind.
Or difficulty with swallowing. And pain in the ear. It's not uncommon. Those are probably common symptoms. When we had cancer related to the smoking and drinking, those are quite common symptoms. Nowadays, with the pattern of new cancer related to the virus infection.
The HPV.
HPV. I see a lot of patients who doesn't have any problem as far as swallowing or talking or pain in the mouth or throat, but they just come because of swelling of neck. And they just have some neck mass. And
a mass in their neck, yeah.
A mass in their neck is quite common. And usually they go to the primary physician and they get some antibiotics. But it doesn't shrink down after antibiotics, then come to the specialist.
So the whole idea is you basically will have, in the mouth, you might have some sores, trouble chewing, swallowing, that kind of thing. In the neck and in the pharynx and in the larynx, you would have pain and some kind of a growth.
You might have voice changes.
Voice changes too. Mm-hmm.
That's important. Mm-hmm. Hoarseness that does not go away after about 4 to 6 weeks should be evaluated.
If you're just joining us, we're listening to Upstate's Health Link on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with otolaryngologist Dr. Robert Kalman and radiation oncologist Dr. Frances Hahn, and we're talking about cancers of the head and neck. So basically, you had mentioned to me that it was very important that the dentist plays a very important role in all of this in terms of picking up some of these cancers. Because in many cases, or in some cases, are these silent, in other words, in terms of symptoms?
Both. They can be not silent or they can be silent, but very often, because they're the ones, at least in the oral cavity, people will often assume that it's a tooth or tooth-related, go to the dentist, and a good dentist plays a huge role in making the diagnosis and then appropriately sending the patient for further management.
And it even strikes me, I had done some interviews previously with some of the local dentists who have said that an annual check for potential oral cancers is an important component of good oral care.
Absolutely. And it's also true that when someone goes for their annual checkup to their physician, they should make sure that the physician carefully examines their mouth and throat.
Oh, very important as well. So let's talk about diagnosis. Mm-hmm. How is this? So let's say a patient comes to you and they have some kind of a mass that isn't responding to antibiotics. Mm-hmm. How do you diagnose that this is truly a cancer?
At that point, I think we have to have very high suspicion for malignancy. So sometimes we proceed with some imaging studies to see whether there is any more evidence of disease or not. Or sometimes, if it is very suspicious for malignancy, I usually send the patient to otolaryngologist, and they have what we call fine needle aspiration. It's minimally invasive.
It's not fine needle aspiration. They literally take a sample of the tissue.
Right, sample of the tissue. That's probably the best.
What type of imaging studies are most common?
We usually do CT scan for the initial evaluation. If we know this is cancer after the biopsy, then we usually take PET CT scan, which shows whether the tumor has spread to the other part of the body, not limited to the head and neck area.
Mm-hmm. And is that common, that these types of cancers do spread, Dr. Hillman?
Statistically, we like to obviously catch them beforehand, before they spread. And it makes a huge difference. We think of the cancer, we have the TNM staging system, which is now commonly known, and you can find it online if you want to read about it. But T is for tumor, N is for lymph nodes in the neck, and M is for what we call distant metastasis. It makes a huge difference. If it's limited to the T and the N, we can still cure it in most cases. Once it gets to the M, once it gets beyond the neck, they are typically considered incurable. We do still treat people, try to lengthen their lives, but we do not expect to cure the cancer at that point.
So that underscores how important early diagnosis is, because obviously if you catch it before it has spread, the chances are, as you said, of a total cure are there.
Absolutely.
So that's crucial. What types of treatments then are involved? I mean, it seems pretty obvious that it depends on the location of the tumor, the staging of the tumor, the severity and all of that of the cancer. But just overall, what types of treatment?
There are three basic approaches. There are tumors that can be treated with surgery only, tumors that can be treated with either radiation or radiation and chemotherapy only, and then there are tumors that need a combination of surgery and radiation. Chemotherapy is an adjuvant. We do not use chemotherapy as a curative treatment for these types of cancers. Radiation can cure, surgery can cure, chemotherapy is an assist. Doesn't work independently.
And without the, if there are, in the absence of the metastases, you basically have what percentage cure?
Well, it depends on the stage. How early you detect this cancer.
How early you get it.
Yeah, if it is the stage one or stage two, what we call T1, T2, cure rate is quite high. We are talking about 80%.
So it's very hopeful in that case.
Right.
I don't want to run out of time, but I know that there can be somewhat serious side effects as a result of the surgery and or radiation. I mean, give us an idea of the kinds of problems that we see.
Well, there will be a lot of side effects associated with the treatment, depending on how intensely we are going to have a treatment. If it is surgery, depending on what portion of the organ should be taken out. If it's radiation therapy, usually we have side effects, long-lasting side effect of dryness of the mouth, and sometimes they have some problem with swallowing.
So swallowing or dryness in the mouth, but how about in the surgical arena? What are the kinds of things you see?
That depends a lot on the location and the extent of the tumor. Small tumors you can remove with minimal side effects, as you'd imagine. Once they get large, you have to remove the entire tumor, which means you're removing a significant portion of an organ. So if it's the tongue, you're removing a lot of the tongue, that affects speech. If it's the voice box, obviously that affects the ability to produce sound. Contrary to popular thinking, the tongue is more important than the voice box for speech.
Yeah.
So you can lose your voice box and still have alternatives that create near normal speech.
Mm-hmm.
You lose your tongue, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. But you have also pointed out to me in other conversations that reconstruction is a lot better these days than it ever was. I don't know about the tongue, but I mean in other parts of the...
And even the tongue. The greatest advances in surgery in the last two or three decades have been in the reconstruction. The resections, the removal of a tumor, remain fairly constant. You have to get the tumor out.
Right, but with the good margins.
Yes,
right.
But the reconstructive techniques have gone forward by leaps and bounds.
Well, this is incredibly helpful and important information. One quick thing, prevention would be smoking cessation and maybe this...
Vaccination against HPV. Everyone coming up from childhood today in our society should be vaccinated against the high-risk strains of HPV. We believe, obviously it's too soon to be able to prove it, but we believe that if we get everybody vaccinated in a generation, we will no longer see the virally caused cancer.
Well, that's a very hopeful way to end, a note to end on. Thank you so very much. My guests have been Dr. Robert Kelman, Professor and Chair of Otolaryngology and Communication Sciences, and Dr. Francis Hahn, Professor of Radiation Oncology, both from Upstate Medical University. Thanks so much again. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.